This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. My guest this morning is Amanda Cronin, project manager for the Washington Water Trust, a nonprofit dedicated to improving and protecting stream flows and water quality throughout Washington State. Amanda Cronin is here today to tell us about the work of the Washington Water Trust and how they are helping to address the challenges of drought in Washington State. Welcome, Amanda.
Thanks for having me.
Would you tell us about the Washington Water Trust?
Yeah, the Washington Water Trust is a conservation group with a very specific mission. We're a 501c3 nonprofit, so a private conservation group. And we seek to restore stream flows throughout Washington State. So in Washington, there are a number of streams and rivers that are very low, have very low flow during the summertime, or even go dry during parts of the year. And there are a number of reasons for this. They could be due to naturally low flow conditions. There could be changes in land use practices that impact low flows. It could be due to groundwater use that's connected to stream flow, or it could be due to out-of-stream withdrawals for irrigation or domestic use. So the number of reasons why we have low flow streams in Washington. And Washington Water Trust is a group that focuses on restoring flows for salmon and putting water back in streams when fish need it the most. And so we focus our work taking a voluntary, market-based, cooperative approach to conservation.
What is a water trust?
A water trust is an organization that works to ensure that there's adequate fresh water for the environment or for fish and wildlife.
And would you say a bit about the history of the Washington Water Trust?
Sure. So we were formed in 1998, and we were the second water trust in the country behind Oregon Water Trust, which was founded in 1996. And so the Washington Water Trust was formed really because there were two environmental advocacy organizations in Washington State that got together, the Center for Environmental Law and Policy and American Rivers, and they got together and they saw a need for an organization that focused solely on the implementation of projects to put water back in stream and sort of stayed out of the court and litigation and lobbying efforts and really focused specifically on implementation. And so that's where Washington Water Trust came from.
What is the history of the Water Trust idea?
Yeah, so the history of the Water Trust idea really came out of the land trust movement of the 1980s and 1990s when hundreds of new land trusts were being formed across the country. And those land trusts were generally nonprofit organizations that were dedicated to conserving land for various purposes, whether it's for conservation, for agriculture, or recreational purposes. And that type of organization was used as kind of a model for a water trust.
How do Western water rights affect how water can be allocated for different needs?
So that gets kind of the crux of the problem and why a group like ours needs to exist. And generally, Western water rights across all Western states generally follow the doctrine of prior appropriation, which means that senior or older claims to water get priority over junior, more recent claims to water. So whoever claimed that water first, and it may be before a state was even founded, has a right to use that water now during times of shortage. So that means that junior water users or more recent claims can be cut off or curtailed. So the oldest claims to water rights in Washington date back to the 1850s, which is well before statehood. And they were all distributed on paper and allocated, all the water rights were allocated without any thought to leaving any water in stream. So a logical way to do it may have been to figure out how much water we need in stream for fish and wildlife and then allocate water out of stream. But instead, water rights were just all allocated out of stream. So many streams in Washington are what's called over-allocated. And so they have more water rights on paper than is actually available, physically available in the stream, and especially physically available during a drought year. So there are a bunch of water rights out there that aren't fulfilled. And so that's a real tenet of Western water law, and it really impacts how water is managed today. So generally, you could have streams that were actually pumped dry for irrigation, and that could be legally done in some places. So the seniority system, the state water law, makes it difficult to secure water for fish and wildlife. At the same time, we have a tool called the Washington State Trust Water Right Program that allows us to purchase and transfer water rights that have a senior priority date in stream. So we would get a senior water right in stream for fish and wildlife. So that's kind of a brief overview about how Western water law impacts our work.
What role does the Washington State Department of Ecology play in the allocation of water in our state?
Yeah, so Department of Ecology is the regulatory and enforcement agency with authority over water rights in the state. And they decide who gets water and how much, when, and are in charge of enforcing existing water laws, like metering laws, for example. And they also oversee all changes to water rights in the state.
Now, would you give us a brief overview of the Washington Water Trust programs?
Sure. So we have two offices, Ellensburg and Seattle, and we are active across the state. We work in the Yakima, the Okanagan, the Wenatchee, the Methow, Walla Walla, Dungeness, Skagit, and many other basins. And we work really in two main areas, but generally we're focusing a lot on stream flow restoration. So we're focusing on putting water back in stream when fish need it the most. And that means we are generally negotiating deals with farmers who are pumping water out of streams for irrigated crops. And we're negotiating deals with them that allow water to be left in during critical periods and ideally also help ensure that that agricultural practice can continue. So we're sort of trying to balance the need for in-stream and out-of-stream water. We also have programs that involved water banking and groundwater mitigation across the state too.
What water resources do we rely on in Washington State?
So we rely on both surface water and groundwater. And surface water is water that comes from a river or a stream or a lake. And groundwater is water that comes from a well. And the majority of households get their water from groundwater in the state, although a good percentage, about 40%, get their water from surface water. That's in large part because the city of Seattle gets water from surface water from rivers. And groundwater and surface water are both managed, highly managed by Department of Ecology. They can be used for irrigated agriculture, they could be used for industrial, commercial uses, they could be used for household, domestic, municipal. There are all kinds of uses for both surface water and groundwater.
Well, we've had a drought this year. How have our water resources been affected by the drought?
Well, 2015 was likely the worst drought in recorded state history. And so this is a year for the record books. We had a warm winter that produced very little snowpack in our two major mountain ranges, the Cascades and the Olympics. And the lack of snowpack had a major impact on our state's water resources. We also had a mild winter followed by a warm spring and the hottest summer on record. So all of those things together produced a really record-breaking drought. So the state's major rivers really rely on snowpack to contribute to stream flows, and snowpack acts as a natural reservoir of which water melts slowly over the course of a year and provides high flows in spring and even low flows in summertime. So with low snowpack, rivers dipped really low this year, this summer, and some of them actually dipped to their lowest level in recorded history. And low snowpack also meant that utilities had to ask some of their customers to even cut back on their water use, either voluntarily or in some cases require them to cut back on their water use in Washington State. So the droughts had a pretty major impact on people and the environment.
I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Amanda Cronin, Project Manager for the Washington Water Trust, a nonprofit dedicated to improving and protecting stream flows and water quality throughout Washington State. Our topic is the work of the Washington Water Trust and how they are helping to address the challenges of drought in Washington State. And you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on listener-powered KEXP 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. How has the drought affected farmers this year?
The drought has had a major impact on farmers. There are hundreds of farmers that have had cut back on their water use or even curtail their water use. And over 300 farmers across the state were required to halt their surface water use for irrigation, meaning they couldn't irrigate their crops. So that was a big loss for hay or alfalfa or orchard crops. For example, in the Chehalis Basin, just sort of south of Seattle, in southwest Washington State, 93 farmers were required to cut back on their water use by Department of Ecology. And over in the Yakima Basin in the central part of the state, on the eastern side of the Cascades, the drought has had a major impact on agriculture. Flows in a lot of the tributaries to the Yakima Basin have been very low and have required that 130 different irrigators have actually had to cut back on their water use and stop watering their crops. And those water rights dated all the way back to 1873, those water rights that were cut back. So that was a very significant impact.
How has the drought affected salmon?
Well, in some cases, we've had reports, sadly, of stranded salmon in rivers that don't have adequate water. So that has been relatively rare, but it's certainly been the case in some parts of the state. And the record-breaking low-flow conditions have also coincided with record high number of returning pink salmon in the Strait of Juan de Fuca and the Puget Sound area. So that's been kind of a difficult situation in rivers like the Dungeness on the Olympic Peninsula. We had a record number of pink salmon returning, but we had record low flow, so we didn't have enough water for them. And the Jamestown Sklallam tribe actually had to get out there and physically move rocks around to make sure that there was a channel for those pink salmon to migrate up. I actually drove out there several times during the low flow periods, and I looked under a bridge at a big pool, and there were hundreds of pink salmon just waiting there in a deep pool, looking upstream with very low flows, very shallow flows upstream of that pool, and they were sort of waiting for the big rains to come and trying to figure out a way to make it upstream. So it's had a major impact on salmon.
Would you speak about the work the Washington Water Trust has done to help address challenges posed by the drought? What has been your approach?
Yeah, so our approach has been to focus our drought response program on in two of the major basins in which we work, both the Yakima in central Washington and the Dungeness in western Washington. And in both basins, we help facilitate leasing programs that left more water in stream for salmon.
What tools do you use to help reconcile the needs of farmers and salmon?
That's a great question. Whenever possible, we try to strike deals that keep farmers farming and streams flowing. So we want to keep agriculture whole if we can. And low flows generally aren't a year-round problem in Washington. They're really a timing problem. So we try to focus our work during critical fish periods. For example, we'll do split season leases where a farmer will irrigate all the way up until a certain date and then stop irrigating, and they may forego a cutting of hay, but we'll compensate them for that loss. Or we might do a pulse flow agreement where an irrigation district will release a pulse of flow to help migrating fish move upstream, and we'll compensate them for that water. Or we might do drought year only leasing, only lease water in a drought year. We have a plethora of tools that we can use to creatively get water back in stream.
Would you go into the specifics of the challenges that have been posed by the drought in the Yakima River Basin?
Yes, the Yakima was hit especially hard this year with lack of significant snow in the mountains, and record-breaking heat really left the streams to only a trickle in some places. And in some places, for example, on Cowichi Creek, which is a tributary to the Yakima River, the Department of Ecology had to hire a stream patrolman, which they haven't done in years, who was somebody to help police water rights between neighbors because flows were still low. We've had tributaries that are flowing into the Yakima River that are flowing at historically low levels, and it's unlike really anything we've ever seen before.
What steps are you taking to help people in the Yakima Basin?
So there are a lot of players and a lot of partners that are working to address the drought in the Yakima because the Yakima is such a big place. There's a lot of irrigated agriculture, and there are a lot of opportunities to improve conditions for fish. So the Washington Water Trust has coordinated with Department of Ecology and another nonprofit group on a leasing program, like I mentioned before. And the leasing program was structured as a reverse auction, which means that water users are allowed to set the price at which they're willing to lease their water. It's completely voluntary, so no one had to participate. But through that program, we were able to lease water on four different streams, the Tianaway, the Big Creek, the Tatum Creek, Roslyn Creek, and we leased about 4.7 CFS, which is cubic feet per second, and that was on about 300 acres. So 300 acres of farmland weren't irrigated through that program. The Department of Ecology also struck some pretty innovative deals with irrigation districts to augment stream flow by using irrigation district water, which in some cases was stored water through the Yakima Project and stored in those big reservoirs that are off of Interstate 90 near Snoqualmie Pass. And so they were able to use some of that stored water to augment seven different creeks in the basin. And they restored about 45 cubic feet per second, which is a lot of water to those streams, and in some cases doubled the flow of those streams. So that was a really effective program as well.
What are the challenges caused by the drought in the Dungeness area of the Olympic Peninsula?
The challenge in the Dungeness is really a question of timing. So even in non-drought years, it's a question of timing because we have peak out-of-stream use, which is in the summertime, in August generally, peaking with the peak low stream flows. And so the stream is naturally lowest when we have the highest demand for it. And at the same time, that same period is when salmon are returning to spawn to the river. So it's really a question of timing. And in drought years, that situation is just exacerbated. and flows drop even lower, and there's not enough water to satisfy irrigation demand and in-stream demand.
What steps is Washington Water Trust taking to help meet these challenges?
Yes, so we had a couple of programs that we operated in the Dungeness Basin this year. The biggest one was a partnership with the Dungeness Water Users Association, which is an umbrella group of irrigation districts and companies. And we coordinated a water leasing program, which was called a reverse auction. And like I mentioned before, that allows folks to set the price at which they're willing to lease their water. It's completely voluntary, and it was funded by Department of Ecology. The goal was to lease water during the low flow period in the river. And we were able to lease about 350 acre feet, which is about 5.5 cubic feet per second. A cubic foot per second, you can kind of visualize that as maybe one basketball of water flowing down the river. So 5.5 extra basketballs flowing down the Dungeness River during the low flow period when that river was dropping very, very low. Another tool that we used in the Dungeness was to switch one of the big farms over to groundwater from surface water. So instead of using river water from the Dungeness River, which was badly needed for salmon at the time, they pumped water from a very deep groundwater aquifer from a well.
You are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Amanda Cronin, project manager for the Washington Water Trust, a nonprofit dedicated to improving and protecting stream flows and water quality throughout Washington State. Our topic is the work of the Washington Water Trust and how they are helping to address the challenges of drought. Overall, how have your programs benefited salmon?
Our programs are designed to have maximum benefit for salmon during various life stages. And so generally, we've been increasing the amount of water that's in stream that would ordinarily be there. There are some streams like the Tianaway River where we've had a major impact. And this year, a lot of the flow that was actually in the river during the very hottest part of the summer was as a result of the contracts that we have with individuals up there. And so we can feel proud that there were about 11 cubic feet per second in the Tianaway River during that time period. And that was really critical for salmon survival.
And how do your programs benefit farmers?
Well, there are a lot of ways that we work with farmers. And generally, the main benefit for the farmers is that they are compensated for their loss of water. And so these payments help farmers compensate for lost revenue, lost agricultural revenue. And then farmers may actually just turn that funding into buying hay to make up for lost production to feed their cows, you know, if they have a cattle operation.
Would you say more about how farmers change their practices to benefit salmon?
Yeah, there are a lot of ways that farmers can change their water use to benefit salmon without just drying up land. They can become more efficient, which is important. And very critically, they can also decrease the amount of water they use out of rivers when salmon really need it. So they may do this by changing to a lower water use crop, so a crop that doesn't use as much water. They may choose to go to dry land. We've worked down in the Walla Walla Basin in southeast Washington where farmers can either grow dry land wheat or they can grow irrigated wheat. So in some places we've purchased their water and that allows them to grow more dry land wheat on more acres but not irrigate it and not have the trouble of actually irrigating. They could also switch to a different source of water. So it could be that they switch to reclaimed or recycled water, or they could switch to groundwater. So there's a lot of different ways that farmers can work with our programs.
What has been key to reaching agreements with farmers?
That's a great question. There are a number of keys to success. Really, we have to have funding available through the Department of Ecology and National Fish and Wildlife Foundation, two of our biggest funders. We have to have relationships built with landowners. And so we have to get to know them, get to know their operation, get to know what their on-farm needs are so that we can come up with solutions so that landowner feels it's worth their while to participate in our programs.
What most stands in the way of reaching agreements?
You know, that's another good question. I think sometimes it's just finding enough willing sellers. So in some cases, it's hard to find people that are ready to change their practices because they want to, you know, keep doing the status quo. They want to keep farming, which is completely understandable, or they don't see a way to decrease their water. So we have to, you know, let them know the high degree of flexibility and creativity that our programs can offer.
What have been some of the specific Washington Water Trust success stories?
Yeah, so over our history, we've had a number of successes, and I'll just highlight kind of a couple of those. I mentioned the Tianaway River, which is a really important stronghold for steelhead in the Yakima Basin in the central part of the state. And we've restored 11 cubic feet per second in the Tianaway through over 20 partnerships with different landowners. So that's a lot of landowners that are really working hard to put water back in the stream. In the Okanagan Basin, way in the northeast part of the state, there's a little stream called Salmon Creek. And Salmon Creek used to run completely dry. It was just rocks. So there weren't many salmon in Salmon Creek. So we struck a deal with the irrigation district there to send pulses of water down during the springtime to help migrating steelhead move up that stream. So that stream went from very dry to wet. And we actually went out and visibly saw those steelhead moving up the stream. So that's, you know, a really great example of our success. On the west side of the state, folks may have been up to the San Juan Islands and Orcas Island. There's a state park called Moran State Park, and there's a creek that runs through there. And now that creek is guaranteed to flow in the summertime in the low flow season because we were able to purchase some water rights to leave in that stream. So those are just a few examples.
What are the long-term implications for water availability if drought conditions continue into the future?
Yeah, so 2015, like I mentioned, was a year for the record books, but climate change forecasters really tell us that these years' precipitation patterns and temperature patterns are likely to become more frequent. So we're going to see more of this. And that means our snow-dependent basins likely will receive less snow, which means even lower flows. So we're going to see more problems like this, and it means we need to ramp up restoration efforts like we did this year. It also means we need to think creatively about our water use and consider different ways to use recycled or reclaimed water, as well as storm water. And we need to think about the crops we're growing and how much water they use. We need to rethink the idea of the irrigated lawn and the importance of that. So I think there's a lot of different strategies that need to be employed.
Where else are water trust groups in operation, and in what ways have they made a contribution?
So there are water trust groups in nearly every Western state. However, the most active water trusts are in the Pacific Northwest, and so the four Columbia Basin states, Oregon, Washington, Montana, and Idaho, have a regional network that's funded by Bonneville Power Administration and administered by National Fish and Wildlife Foundation. And that is a great funding network that funds those four states to work on stream flows restoration.
Where does Washington Water Trust plan to focus its efforts in the future?
Well, there's still considerable work to be done, and we plan to continue working statewide. We have particular focus, though, in the Yakima, the Okanagan, Dungeness, and Skagit basins, and then the other basins I mentioned earlier. But yeah, there's still a lot of work to be done.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
Well, in Washington, everyone's drinking water comes from an environmental resource. So it may come from a well, from groundwater, or it may come from surface water, like in the city of Seattle, where we get our water from rivers. So conservation is really key to make sure that we can maintain adequate flow in our rivers for preservation of fish and wildlife and recreational and aesthetic values. And I think one of the key things that individual households can think about is that the majority of water use for households is actually used outdoors. So conservation of lawn and garden watering is really important in drought years and non-drought years. So if you think about conservation as having an impact on both fish and wildlife and recreational boating, kayaking, and aesthetic values, I think we can begin to think about our impact on water resources. And generally, if anybody has questions about water rights or our work, they can feel free to contact us.
Well, thanks so much for being here, Amanda.
Thank you.
You were just listening to Amanda Cronin, Project Manager for the Washington Water Trust, a nonprofit dedicated to improving and protecting stream flows and water quality throughout Washington State. For more information, check on the web at washingtonwatertrust.org. Again, that's washingtonwatertrust.org. The sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters program you have just heard will be on the streaming archive section of KEXP's website at kexp.org for the next 14 days. In addition, sustainability segment interviews are available as podcasts, along with KEXP's music podcasts. Go to kexp.org, click on Demand, and then Podcasting. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the sustainability segment again next week on listener-powered 90.3 FM and kexp.org.